interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the ShopRite Tobacco Plus Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. It is a Thursday, February 22nd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're live from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here, the famous Clint D, back inside the ShopRite Tobacco Plus Studios, and we're coming right out the gate with a tremendous guest today. Let's bring him on right now. We're going to the Artco Equipment Hotline, former Acadiana Wrecking Ram, LSU Tiger, played professional football as well in the state of Florida, Jacob Cotrera, our guest. Jacob, how goes it on a Thursday?
How's it going, man? Thanks for having me on, bud.
It's a pleasure, and the topic du jour, of course, Ted Davidson retires after 14 years as the head coach at Acadiana. And I know that as you were coming up in the area, Bill Dotson was the man. Well, Ted Davidson followed the man, and he put up four state championship banners. How do you reflect on today's big news?
Man, well, he was also with that man, too. He coached with him since 1980, so he learned a lot. He brought that over to when he became a head coach. And, man, it's a bittersweet moment for sure. We're sure going to miss him. But I'm also very happy for him. This guy is a tremendous coach, and in my opinion, he's the best in Louisiana. And it's going to be somebody's big shoes. Somebody's got to fill some big shoes, that's for sure.
Jacob, Coach Davidson, 148-42, his record while at Acadiana. What is it about the culture he either helped to kind of carry over from Dotson or really stamp and make his own? What is it about that culture that enabled such a prolific program?
I think it's just his mentality he brings to the table. He demands the best. People say attitude is choice, and that wasn't the case with Ted. It was his attitude. If you're doing his way, you're going to be out of there. And everybody just bought into it. Whatever he preached, whatever he was teaching us, a workout or a different kind of drill, he taught it in a way that made us believe that this was actually going to, take us to the next step, get us that, our next win. He made us believe that whatever we were doing was for a good purpose.
Our guest right now, as we lead off today's show, Jacob Cotrera, reflecting on the news of the day that Ted Davidson retiring after 14 years as the head coach of the Acadiana Wrecking Rams. And that 2004 team, Jacob, 5-5, 3-4 in district play. So what was it about that first year that was a little tough to maybe get over, and how did you not only get over the hump but really take it to the next level?
I'm not sure really about that 1 year. We just call it a hiccup. He was just starting out. I don't know what it was about that, but, my senior class was the first year that we went to the state championship. And, I think from there on that, everyone believed that it was possible. And, it also gave, coach that winning edge too. And, so people just bought into the system. It almost got to the point where it seemed that, we could tell the other team what we're running, and we're still going to run it down this road. That's just the mentality he brought to the table.
And the time I was coming through, and you and I, Jacob, we're not too far apart in age. It was Evangel, it was West Monroe, it was maybe John Curtis. I'm sure you're going to give me a push for why Acadiana has had a better run than any of them. What is that push?
Just over the last couple of years, nothing's changed with the offense, that's for sure, because they've been running this for 30-something years. And I just think it's the way, his mentality and his smash-mouth attitude about everything. You knew when you play Acadiana, you're going to get hit in the mouth, and there's nothing you can do about it. Just do your best to hang on for today. And that's what I love most about it. That's what I'm going to miss out of him, but I'm very happy for him, and there's no one better out there. I just hope the next guy in line
brings that same mentality to it.
I think you said it well earlier. The next guy up definitely has big shoes to fill. We're going to visit
Absolutely.
For another couple of minutes with Jacob Cotrera, and I got to ask you about the LSU Tigers. They come off year one of the Ed Orgeron era, and how much would you have liked to play for Dave Aranda and this defense that he's building in Baton Rouge?
Man, how about that? We can't lose that guy, that's for sure. We got to pay him whatever he wants. He's unbelievable. I would have loved to play for him. I have to give these to coordinators, but outside looking in, man, it just looks like a fun defense to be a part of.
And I'll ask you about your forte at linebacker. Devin White came from North Louisiana, was recruited more as a running back, but they had enough talent there. They had Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis, I mean, so many guys, Darrell Williams. He played linebacker, and he's been lights out for the last 2 years. Just, does he remind you of anybody? What do you think of his future in 2018?
Man, he is a special player for sure. There's very few guys out there that I'll watch play linebacker and be like, okay, yeah, I would have thought the same. I could have made that play. I would have done that same exact thing. When I watch him, he reminds me of Levante David, a guy I played with in Tampa Bay. He's unbelievable, tremendous talent as well. He's a bigger Levante David, in my opinion. This guy is all over the field. He's just a monster. They do stuff that I wouldn't have thought to do or I couldn't do, not athletically-wise. He's very fun to watch. I'm looking forward to his future year, for sure.
And, Jacob, I know you've got your hand in so many things these days, but how much are you able to get back and check out some of these LSU games in the fall? Because I continue to hear Coach O is opening the gates maybe more than some of the coaches in the last couple of decades.
Yeah, I went back to last camp to a few practices. Man, they have an upbeat mentality over there for sure. Everything is fast-paced. The attitude is right. I'm liking what I'm seeing. I recently the recruiting. I know we fell back in the rankings, but LSU's never had a problem with getting talent there, so I'm not too concerned about that. We've seen a carryover from what we did at the end of the year last year, and keep it going, man.
Cannot think of a better way to open a show than to visit with Jacob Cotrera, especially on a day like today. Jacob, thanks so much. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it, man. Have a good one.
How great is that guy? Jacob Cotrera, right off the bat when you need him. And that certainly was a bit of a bombshell earlier today. I'll give a tip of the cap. If you want some more insight into this, some really good quotes given from Ted Davidson to Kevin Foote, if you check out the Daily Advertiser. So credit given there to Footer. He got the goods there. And Davidson comes out and tells you the 43-42 overtime loss to Puka Williams and Hanville in the state semifinals. Look, his words, not mine, just about ripped his heart out of him. So after 40-plus years in the business, anybody has earned their right to step aside and pursue other avenues, other interests, and family, friends in their life. No question about it. But that's a tough way to go out, and sometimes you've given it your best shot. And this Acadiana team that Ted Davidson had in 2017, I got to see them in person not once but twice. They were quite good, and that was a special team, one of the area's best for sure. And Ted Davidson has been one of the area's best coaches for a long time. He steps down today. Our thanks again to Jacob Cotrera. Unbelievable way to start the program. Let me tell you how we're going to follow that up. Sink or swim question of the day on the other side of this first break. And then a guest list that hopefully continues to live up to the billing of JC, Jacob Cotrera. Hunt Palmer's coming aboard at 4:30. What in the world is LSU baseball going to do with its starting pitching? I'll get confidence levels from Hunt on all four individuals who've started for LSU so far, long-term confidence levels going forward, and who might step into those shoes if they continue to falter. So Hunt's going to join us here in about 20 minutes at 5:30. Robin Fambro, excited to have her back on the program. Prep beat writer extraordinaire for The Advocate. And I want to get a little outside looking in perspective, local area teams to Acadiana that she likes in the playoffs. I spoke with her briefly before the show. I think there's at least one that may surprise you. So we know there's three teams that are top seeded in the area. Beyond those, who does Robin like? And then she's also going to tell you the most vulnerable number one seed in any of the classifications in her opinion. So we're excited to have Robin Fambro aboard at 5:30. Speaking of top-rated area teams, the Westgate Tigers are the number one seed in Class 4A. Their head coach, Oliver Winston, joining the program at straight up 6 o'clock. And then at 6:30, a little Q&A replay. Those that didn't get my Larry Holder interview yesterday, you get it today. At 6:30, we're going to run that right back by you. He thinks the Saints have a great chance of locking down Drew Brees before the middle of May. When does it happen? Stay tuned. At 6:30, he'll tell you all that and then a whole lot more. So we had Jacob Cotrera. We've got Hunt Palmer, Robin Fambro, Oliver Winston from the Barry, and Larry Holder all set to join today's program. We are loaded, and we got plenty more coming at you when we return. You are dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana's number one rated sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Right back in. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Sink or Swim question of the day coming up, and I'm going to keep it on the high school football ranks. But a reminder, as we're here at the Taproom River Ranch, I'm out of here today at 7, and the fun just continues to ramp up from there. From 8 until 11 p.m., come check out the sounds of Julie Williams. She is fantastic. I've seen her a number of places around town. They're thrilled to get her in here to the Taproom River Ranch. So from 8 to 11, live music. They're going to have more than 40 beers that are on tap here. And you can come check out all the flatbreads you want. The wings, of course, with the schwing sauce. And then a lot more. Happy hour from 3 to 6. And again, they'll start that back up from midnight until 2 a.m. All at the Taproom River Ranch. CD, hit the button. I've got a question that's going to make a lot of people think. Exciting and new. From 2005 until modern day, which is the best high school football program in the state? And I'm not even going to give you options. I'm going to let you pull this out of whatever crevice that you want. But who's the best high school football program in the state? And I'm using 2005 as the line in the sand because, of course, that's when Acadiana really started to make its mark. I mentioned, and this is something I found interesting, going back and reading through the article from Kevin Foote, 2004, and that would have been a couple years after I graduated from high school, the Wrecking Rams went 5-5. And since then, they have been, more often than not, a juggernaut. And so we'll keep this in the realm of the Ted Davidson era on the heels of the news that Wrecking Rams coach has retired today. Is Acadiana the best high school football program in the state from then until now? Or would you put somebody else above the Rams? Don't be bashful today on me. 706-0111, 706-0111. I know this. There's a couple of teams that if you're putting a list like this together, you better consider them or you're not very serious about your craft. Wes Monroe and John Curtis are the very first two that came to mind. And the landscape has changed because had you asked this question about the 10 years prior to that, then you'd be talking to Vangel. But it's not exactly the same. They're still a very good program. They still continue to play a lot of teams out of state, which has been their MO. They kind of helped bring that in many ways to Louisiana. But Vangel hasn't been as well represented, not even close, in the last 5 years, especially in terms of state championships. So I considered a number of programs, but eventually crossed off my list of Vangel. Crossed off my list, Parkview. I crossed off my list, Rummel. But I will tell you, when they first went to this split format, and I think it was Rummel that took the very first one in Division One, Jay Roth had something going in New Orleans that felt like it wasn't about to end anytime soon. And it felt like they were going to have a stranglehold on that Catholic League, and it hasn't exactly gone down that way, in part because of John Curtis. So I crossed Rummel off the list, but it's funny. If you did this 10 to 15 years ago, you'd start talking to Vangel. If you did this 5 to 10 years ago, I think you'd have talked a little bit of Rummel. I would also mention that my alma mater, no homer radio, but Catholic High has won two of the last three Division I state titles. It's not a long path to get there and go through there, as we know with those brackets, but that's a worthy feat. And so I don't think they are the answer, but I think the Catholic Bears of Baton Rouge are probably a top five program in the state. That seems fair to me. Now, the one moving forward that is the correct answer to this question, your overlords, and nobody wants to hear this, is St. Thomas More, Turnings Catholic. I get that. U-High moving forward is going to be an absolute mammoth, and they already are. I'm not so sure that there were two better teams than U-High and De La Salle in the state this past season, and U-High dusted them in the dome. The only other team this year that deserved consideration, and you should put them in this list as well, is Edna Carr. And I think Edna Carr, Landry Walker, are some of the teams that are not John Curtis in New Orleans that deserve heavy consideration. All that said, if you want to put Acadiana ahead of these with four state titles in the last 13 seasons, I'm not going to blame you. You could do that, and you'd probably be right. So Acadiana is a fine answer here. If it's not the Wrecking Rams, I might lean a little bit toward West Monroe. But U-High, their time is coming. And I will mention Zachary as well. If you thought it was just the quarterback that came through, started at LSU, now he's at Mizzou in Lindsey Scott Jr. If you thought David Brewerton's program was all about Lindsey Scott Jr., you thought wrong. They brought another title home this year, beating Puka Williams and company, who beat Acadiana. So the Wrecking Rams are a really good answer here. If it's not them, it's probably West Monroe, in my opinion. Let's go out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tim, who do you got?
Is there a way I can call it a tie, being I'm a former Wrecking Ram? man, Acadiana the past few years has just been so different from the time I played, because I actually played in the same years as Jake did. And the one thing I hate about West Monroe, it seems like they always had our number, man. It was just crazy. But West Monroe and Acadiana the past 15 years or so have been the two most dominant teams in the state, hands down. So you got that one right. So, but out of the two, I'm going to have to go with my alma mater, man, and say Acadiana. So just throwing that
there
out
you go. I like it. Tie goes to the runner. Tie goes to the local squad, perhaps, there. We got time for more. YP, you people out there in listener land. Come on now. 706-0111. If it's not Acadiana, if it's not West Monroe, then it's probably John Curtis. And we shouldn't discount what JT and company continue to do over in River Ridge. We're going to go back to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ron, we're talking best high school football program since 05. Who you got?
If you go by the numbers, I think you have to go with John Curtis, West Monroe. And another one I thought would have been good through the years, too, has been Destraham. I don't think they're on the same level as West Monroe and John Curtis, but consistently you have to go with those teams. And then I'm a local guy, too. And then you put a Kate Allen there, you know. But I think it's John Curtis, West Monroe, and you can't exclude a Kate Allen at all.
I love it. Thank you, Ron, for the call, because you brought up a lot of good points there, but maybe none finer than Destrehan. I mean, what a football factory. And not as much in terms of the championships. They've had those as well. But think about the college talent that's come out of Destrehan and is going to LSU in every which way. Destrehan's a really good point there. And I brought up Edna Carr. Nobody's biting there so much, but think about the speedy Gerald Willis days. To hell with what those guys did at the college level. And the car has been a really good program for a really long time. Let's go back again to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Carl, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'm going with John Curtis because I've seen it up close personal. I had two nephews play for him. They have eight state championship rings between them. They both went on and played in college. You know, they line up smash mouth football year after year, and it just don't beat them. You know, it doesn't happen very often. And I'll point way back when Hoover, Alabama was all over the country, John Curtis went with Joe McKnight and dominated at the time. So I'll go with John Curtis.
I love that memory. Thank you for the call there, Carl. The late, great Joe McKnight. That's a great drop right there. Let's take one more. We got to hurry to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Ken, you're in. Who you got?
Oh, man, you can't leave out the Powells. They've been consistent since Louis Cook got there. So I'm going with the local boys, the Powells.
And I'm going to tell you a quick story, Ken. Thank you for the call. Before we hit a break, I cannot believe that team did not come off the tip of my tongue in this segment so far. I literally saw Louis Cook on Saturday. I just saw the man. So next time I see him, well, he's too much of a gentleman, but he'll have somebody maybe put a foot up my backside. Cannot believe I left out the Pios there. Above some of the other examples I gave, Parkview, Evangel, Rummel, yeah, you put the Pios above all those. That's a really, really good call there, Ken. Thanks for the reminder. Yeah, they're pretty darn good at football. Taking a break, then coming back, talking LSU baseball with Hunt Palmer. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Yeah. Finally, it's time in the program today to discuss LSU baseball. You're dialed in to 103.7 The Game. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports every Thursday at 4:30. Our pleasure to welcome aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, Hunt Palmer. And Hunt, 2-2 on the season is LSU. It didn't start the way anybody probably wanted against Notre Dame, but you know they're 500 through four games. Your general impressions before we dive a little bit into some of the pitching.
Well, the weekend was atrocious in just about every aspect. They were awful in defense. They were awful at starting pitching. The bullpen was okay, and they didn't swing the bat or the flip either. And they were lucky to win on Friday. They had a couple of big swings on Friday, and that was enough. But overall, it was a really bad weekend in terms of performance. Last night, really disappointing with Cam Sanders, obviously not being able to record an out and a chance for him to make an audition for a weekend role. But the bats got going a little bit against, you know, Southland Conference midweek pitching. So you get a victory and you move along. But I think we'll learn a lot more. Some guys have a chance to bounce back and you get a chance to get a couple of good wins against a good Texas pitching staff and a pretty solid Texas team. So overall, through four games, not very good. But that's the beauty of baseball. You can play terrible for a weekend and there's another game 2 days later and you just keep on trucking.
Since I have known you, Hunt, you've always been very level-headed and taking a pretty long-term approach to looking at LSU baseball talent. So I'll ask you to do that with the four pitchers that have started games so far. So with Hess, Gilbert, Peterson, and Sanders, give me a 1-10 confidence level in each pitcher long-term, not based off what you've seen so far, but your confidence in each for the rest of this season.
Yeah, I guess to do that, could you prep me on this one a little bit? It's 1-10 in terms of what they can be. I mean, if I'm on a 1-10 to Alex Lang or Aaron Nola being a 10, Caleb Gilbert can't be a 9 or a 10. He's not that guy. But I have I'm an 8 out of 10 on Caleb Gilbert being a solid Friday night pitcher. He's got plenty of fastball. He's got good breaking ball. His command is usually very good. He just got hit. He got too much of the plate on Friday, and Notre Dame put some great swings on the ball. But, you know, as I said, Gilbert's not going to lead the SEC in strikeouts. Not going to, you know, strike out 13 in the game, but I think he's going to be fine. I'm an 8 out of 10 on him. With Hess as a starter, I'm closer to 4 because he's just never done it, and the command was just so bad on Saturday. I mean, to walk 6 guys and 2 in a third inning, and go to 7 3-ball counts, for LSU to be great, he needs to be a starter, I think. For them to make a deep run and be a great team, he probably needs to be a starter, but my confidence level in him being a really good starter is probably not more than a 4, maybe a 5. For Peterson, it's probably right around that 4 area too. I mean, he can be a solid third guy because if you throw 92 miles an hour and have a nice breaking ball, you know, that can be your Sunday guy for sure. That's just fine. But he, you know, just couldn't throw it over the plate on Sunday. He walks 2 guys and then third guy hits a homer and you let him swing the bat one time and score 3 runs. You can't do that. So, you know, I in terms of being a Sunday guy, maybe it's closer to like a 6 for Peterson, but in overall, it's probably more of a 4. Cam Sanders is interesting, and that's closer to maybe a 5 or a 6 there because the stuff is good. No, I have said a lot in preseason that a lot of people were talking up Cam Sanders, and I said, look, every time I saw him, he walked a lot of guys. And last night, he just couldn't find it. But if he gets more comfortable, Alan Dunn continues to work with him, his stuff plays. And so, you know, I think there's a chance there. And really what that exercise does is tell you that the starting pitching is a huge question mark, and I don't feel great about it. And if your starting pitching's not good, you're not going to win many series. So it was a sobering first weekend, but Alan Dunn's worked some miracles in the past, so we'll see what happens.
As good as it gets on the analysis. Hunt Palmer with us. You're listening to 103.7 The Game. Okay, I'm going to piggyback off that. Give me another candidate or two, guys that haven't started a game yet that maybe they'll earn their way into getting that type of opportunity in the midweek, and then we'll see what they can do from there.
I got one guy that everyone knows and one guy that they don't. I think that Matthew Beck might garner a chance at a look there. He's just thrown it great, and he is no longer the 85-mile-an-hour soft tosser. He is now a 6'7 guy that's throwing 90 miles an hour and blowing the ball by people. I mean, he beat two guys on Friday night with fastballs up in the zone, and then last night against UNO, he was able to beat a bunch of guys with fastballs while he was out there. So, you know, I like his ability to throw strikes. I like his demeanor, and now the velocity plays a little bit. So, you know, as well as he's throwing in the bullpen, they got to find somebody to start. That's a chance. And then it's not right now, but maybe talk to me in May. A.J. Labus, I like a lot, and he is absolutely a starter during his career at LSU. He's coming back from injury. He threw a bullpen over the weekend. It was very good. He's coming back from some back surgery over the Christmas break, and, you know, it's the same deal. You just don't want to fall into that Jake Lapp trip where you think that the hurt guy is going to come rescue the season because they're hurt and it's hard to come back from. But A.J. Labus really impressed. He was throwing 85. Now that he's back at full strength, he ought to be able to run it up there close to 90, which is what he was doing in high school when he was a 17th-round pick. And the changeup is awesome. The breaking ball is pretty good. Just file that one away for later. He may be able to pitch in the next 10 days. But as a starting pitcher down the line, if they can build his arm string up throughout the season, he's got a chance.
Hunt, you mentioned earlier that your 8 out of 10 confidence level in Caleb Gilbert is geared toward him pitching on Friday. What went into Maneri's thought process on flipping he and Hess Friday, Saturday?
Well, he said that he just saw Hess as more of a Friday guy. He didn't think Gilbert was going to be the Friday guy. He just saw him more of a Saturday guy. And I'll touch on that, but at first, I don't really care what order they throw in. All those games count for one. I care what order they throw in the regional and then maybe in the super. But in an SEC weekend, all those games count for one, so I don't really care. We've seen in the past when LSU played a Thursday game, Paul Maneri held Aaron Nola and threw him on Friday just to give him full rest. So Friday guy, Saturday guy, kind of whatever. I was surprised to see them move past the Friday, but I don't, you know, it doesn't do a ton for me. I think his thought process is that Hess is more dominant, and if it works, he gives us a better chance against Ryan Rollison from Ole Miss, against Blaine Knight from Arkansas. You know, you run into these SEC aces that are really good, Casey Mize over at Auburn. He gives us a chance to win that 2-1 game, maybe a little more than Gilbert does. But like I said, I think Gilbert is just fine. He throws 92, 93 miles an hour, and the slider's good. It was plenty enough to beat Oregon State last year, so you know, what day they throw on, I'm not crazy about, but I think the switch was Maneri thinks that Hess, if it clicks, he gives you a better shot.
A few more quick hitters for our guy, Hunt Palmer. And, Hunt, I'm going to punt for now on Josh Smith. Next week, maybe we'll see how they're moving on from the injured shortstop. But Austin Bain, I wanted to make sure to get here. What have we learned about how they could use him? And you mentioned on this program that second base is possible. They DH'd him last night. He looked pretty darn good, and he looked pretty comfortable. So the future of Austin Bain this season.
It's interesting. This is surprising me a little bit, and I'm a little reluctant to open up to it. I think he may be able to help you a little on the mound, and I'm not wild about his defense at second. I think Cal Hughes and Brant Broussard give you more there. But he did hit the ball really hard last night. Now, when I look at him, I look at a guy who's stepping in the bucket, and his arms are kind of overextending a little bit. And I wonder if hitting a Southland midweek bullpen guy and hitting the number two pitcher from Mississippi State, I don't know if those correlate or not. So I'm not quite ready to go all in on Austin Bain playing
second base and hitting in the sixth hole. I need to see a lot more against much better arms. LSU will see very good arms in the Texas weekend rotation tonight, especially on Friday. So, you know, maybe he proves me wrong there. But I'm not quite ready to jump on the Austin Bain is going to be a force in the lineup for LSU. But what it is for me is a great story of a guy who stuck around, who, you know, was the third starter as a freshman for a long time in SEC play, kind of had his role reduced to nothing last year, and has stuck around, kept putting work in, kept showing up to practice, and is having some fun out there at the very least.
It's almost like you have psychic ability. The last place I wanted to go is the Texas rotation. And you mentioned Nolan Kingham, or you referenced him. 10 strikeouts against the Cajuns and beat him up last Friday night. Kingham, Shugart, Henley, all right-handers. What significance does that hold for this LSU lineup at the plate?
Well, those guys are good. I mean, your audience is going to know it because they probably watched a lot of them last weekend. I didn't see any of the game, but I'm looking at the statistics, and it looked like three very well-played contested games. And I mean, the Texas guys, the starters didn't walk people. They got strikeouts. They worked, through the fifth and even through the eighth on Friday. And so I was really impressed with the numbers they put up because I know that the Cajuns put together a good lineup just about every year. So, you know, Texas is not quite back to where it was in its prime back when they were winning titles and playing against LSU in 09, but this pitching staff is their strength, and it's very strong. So, you know, LSU did not swing the bats well against a mediocre Notre Dame staff. They're going to have their hands full for sure. And, you know, it's really going to hurt you if you have to play without Josh Smith and Zach Watson. So Zach Watson, there's no update on Watson today. Mary hadn't even asked him. He'll be kind of a game-time decision. You'd hope he can at least get in there by Saturday or Sunday, but obviously Smith will be out a while, and you take a big offensive hit with Hal Hughes in there at short. So it's going to be tough for LSU, but you know, the box will probably be alive, and I think they'll play better this week than they did last week, and they can't play much worse.
You never disappoint, and Thursdays are getting a lot better on this program during baseball season. Hunt, thank you so much, my man.
You bet, Ben. Talk to you next week.
Hunt Palmer laying it down. And you want to know just how good the Texas trio of starters were against the raging Cajuns? He mentioned they don't walk many people. Starting pitching walked two Cajuns last weekend in Austin. Two. Now, on the flip side of that, struck out 18. So LSU will have its work cut out for them this weekend at the box. Quick break. When we return, Clint's been getting more calls. I think people want to talk about this best high school football program topic. So we're going to do that. And we'll let you know just how wrong we were, Samsonite style, on the total number of LSU pitchers last night. We're coming right back in.
Come on. Come on. Yeah.
10 minutes until 5 o'clock. Ben Love live from the Tap Room River Ranch. And this place is starting to get packed. So the weekend's starting early. We're just helping bring you home, or maybe helping to bring you out here to join me. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Yesterday's Sink or Swim question of the day was interesting. I've got poll results from Twitter for you. Today's question, bringing some intrigue as well. Since 2005, which has been the best high school football program in the state? And we asked that on the heels of today's news that Ted Davidson, retiring after 14 years, leading the Acadiana Wrecking Rams, 4 state titles during his tenure. So all those questions on the table, ready for you to call in. 706-0111. While I am waiting, how about this note? And this just came out within the last hour or so. Evan Daniels, I spent a good bit of time working with him at scout.com. Now Scout 247 have come together, and it's all under the 247 umbrella. Evan Daniels reporting that the Raging Cajuns basketball program is going to get a visit next weekend from Jordan Brown, 6'10", blue-chip recruit from the state of California. So just process this and consider when the last time the Cajuns were able to get this type of prospect, at least on campus. Jordan Brown is also being recruited heavily by UCLA, Gonzaga, took a visit last weekend to Cal Berkeley, and he's also considering St. John's. So this is a guy who could end up being a college teammate of Greg Williams Jr., who's at LCA right now. Now, the other reason that Jordan Brown is interested in the Cajuns because of the success they're having. Would never want to undersell that. Jordan Brown's father, Dion, played for the Raging Cajuns. So there's a bloodline there. Some of the same things that maybe helped Kobe Julian to want to stay in-state, following in the footsteps of his dad, Wayne. So, look, UL playing at Troy tonight. Have a chance to keep that number in the loss column in conference play to just one. And hopefully that same number will be in front of them as a seed when Marlin and the Cajuns go to Lakefront Arena for the conference tournament in a few weeks. But as this year's team continues to do work on the floor, that is some pretty serious work in the way of recruiting. Jordan Brown, 6'10", blue chip recruit from California, is coming in next weekend to Lafayette. So what restaurant will they be at? I don't know. But I'm sure some Cajuns fans will be stalking the best ones on the lookout now. All right, Clint. I teased something when we came in this segment. Yesterday's sink or swim question of the day. How many pitchers will LSU use? Twitter only allows poll questions to have four answers. So we allowed 2, 3, 4, or 5+. What exactly was the final number last night?
It was 9 pitchers.
9. Same amount as Cat Lives. Incredible. Cam Sanders not able to record an out. And we were way off. So maybe we should have recalibrated some of the poll answers there. 6, 7, 8, or 9+. Man, you'd have got it there with 9 or more. As it were, yesterday we had 36% of our responders go 5+. So technically, of course, you were right. 36% came in at 4. That's where I was. We were wrong. 21% came in at 3. I think that's where CD was. You were wrong. And 7% said only 2. So whole staff has never been in a fuller effect than it ended up being last night. All right, that was yesterday talk. As far as today talk goes, on the heels of the Davidson announcement, we started chirping about the best high school football program in the Pelican State since the year 2005. And what a call we got from Ken, the Notre Dame football Pios, and Louis Cook, set to be a Louisiana State Hall of Famer later this summer. I literally saw the man on Saturday. Had a good chat with him. Got to introduce him to my dad. Had a good time. 4 days later, I can't be troubled to remember that he leads one of the state's best programs. So trust me when I tell you that I've heard about it from the Berry. And people that live there, people that live in Rain and Crowley, I've been hearing about it from people who are all over but have allegiances to that program. And so, yes, Just Do is being given to the Notre Dame Pios, certainly in that conversation. But off the top of the dome, I said it was probably West Monroe or Acadiana, with Curtis a close third. Notre Dame belongs in that conversation as well. We had a good call as well, and Ron, I believe it was, brought up Destrehan. I would submit Edna Carr needs to be in that conversation as well. And then it's always about criterion, right? Is it state titles? Is it college prospects? Is it Division I signees? You know, name your criterion. That's always important in a conversation like this. But I tell you, you cannot have this conversation without bringing up Acadiana. So on the day that Ted Davidson steps down, a man, by the way, who has never been on this program, things that make you go, why doesn't he answer my calls? No, okay, no. Won't throw shade on this the day of his retirement. But Acadiana has absolutely been one of the best programs in the state. Now going forward, I think you're going to have to watch out for those U-High Cubs. I don't know if it matters what classification you're in. A monster down there with Chad Mahaffey in Baton Rouge. But we shall see. St. Thomas More, Turley's Catholic, De La Salle, just about every year they're going to have their own cracks to try and unseat the Cubs. It was only a couple of years ago that St. Thomas More was at the top of that mountain. And they beat another program that you have to consider in this conversation in Parkview. So a lot of fun to think about those things. You want to discuss them? It's on your mind now? Call us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. We will have room for you. But right now, I'm almost out of room in this hour. I got to get to the final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Vengeance and Bo Jordan certainly starting this year off with a bang. My man is back with a vengeance. Every single ball that he has put into play and has gone for a hit has been extra bases. So a lot of lamenting, understandably, about LSU starting pitching so far. Hard to really beef on what they've done at the plate. Now, they haven't had the depth of quality consistent 300-plus hitting, and they've fallen behind a lot. In fact, every single game. But you scored 14 runs last night. I don't care about who the competition is. They had an outburst at the dish. And back with a vengeance is one Bo Jordan. The final word of this hour is brought to you by the Village Station. They are your final stop to fill up your stomach and fill up your tank as you head on tonight on Maurice Avenue. The Village Station, 9405 Maurice Avenue, right next door to the Dollar General. 1 hour down, two more to go. Robin Fambro at 5:30. Oliver Winston, basketball coach at Westgate High in the 6 o'clock hour. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Coming right back to the Tap Room River Ranch. Off and running. It's the 5 o'clock hour of Bumper to Bumper Sports, taking you home on this Thursday, February the 22nd, and only on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Ben Love kicking it at the Tap Room River Ranch, awaiting your phone call and just generally exploring the space inside the ShopRite Tobacco Plus Studios. My man, Clint Domang, the famous Clint D. In hour one, good conversation with Jacob Cotrera. Looking back on the Acadiana High career of Ted Davidson, Reckon Rams head coach announced today stepping aside after 14 years at the helm. How about a 148-42 record leading the Rams? And he also guided them to four state championships. If you missed that with Jacob, make sure you catch it on demand. You can find it at our website, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app. We also spoke with Hunt Palmer. He gave some interesting insight into what could be from LSU starting pitching moving forward. So if you weren't with us there, I'll just give you the numbers. You can go back again on demand and catch his explanation. But 1 to 10 long-term confidence levels on the four guys that Maneri and Allen Dunn have sent to the mound so far to start games. Hunt gave Caleb Gilbert an 8, but said he projects more as a Friday guy than a Saturday, so he didn't seem like he was too keen maybe on the move that's happening this weekend. He gave Zach Hess and Todd Peterson a 4 out of 10, and even after last night's effort, he doled out a 5, leaning toward a 6 on Cam Sanders. So because, as Hunt said, the stuff is there, he's not ready to rule out Cam Sanders as somebody who can long-term be effective as a starting pitcher this year on LSU's staff. So a lot of stuff, a lot of meat on the bone from the 4 o'clock hour. I'll lead with a football note, though, in the 5 o'clock hour, largely because Blue thinks I should talk football every single day on the show. Right, Blue? Oh, we're just having some fun, Padna. But this is an interesting note. You often hear about how college programs and their coaches sponge things from the NFL. When I share this note with you, tell me what comes to mind for you first, because I wonder if it's the same thought that I had. Earlier this morning on 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge, James Craig, new offensive line coach, was on with Jordy Collot and T-Bob Hebert. And Craig told them that Dave Aranda, LSU DC, and a lot of LSU's defensive staff, as we speak, are currently visiting Seattle and studying up with the Seahawks staff. Okay, I just gave you about 1, 2, 3 Mississippi of dead air, because I'm curious if your first thought was my first thought. Who's going to learn more from whom there was exactly what came to my mind when I read that. Now, don't get me wrong. I love this kind of stuff. Nothing better in any industry than an exchanging of ideas, right? That's why there are conventions in just about every industry, other than, you know, being able to get away from the wife, the kids, and all those things. Right. I get it, guys. But seriously, it's great when your staff at the college level can mingle with a pro staff. But I heard this, and I immediately thought two things. Maybe it's the pessimist in me. Although, as I'm sitting here at the Taproom River Ranch, whole lot of glasses of beer are looking half full to me right now. Nonetheless, I heard this news this morning, and I said, number one, as I just told you, or asked of you rhetorically, who's going to learn more from whom in this situation? But number two, I know you're paying the man $2.5 million for the foreseeable future per season. I know that Aranda has already had the Brinks truck back up to his nice house. I know that. But for the love of all that is holy, please don't put Dave Aranda in front of people like Pete Carroll. Why don't we just not do that as a practice? I know you probably can't stop Aranda from doing what he wants, especially now that he's got not only the money, but let's face it, he's got the power. He hired a former crony, guy he spent some time with at a prior stop, to come and run his safeties now, a guy who's a proven recruiter. And a lot of people thought that he would naturally fill the inside linebacker's role. Made sense, right? Meatball, Dennis Johnson is moving from linebacker's coach down to D-line to take the place of Pete Jenkins. They'll backfill, right? That's the right thing to do. That's the natural thing to do. It's not what he did. Aranda, who was the only person with a quote in that release, said, no, we're going to hire a safeties coach because I have the power. And so now he's got the power to go visit with anybody he wants. And the Seahawks, over the last 5 to 7 years, certainly way up there in terms of defenses in the NFL, productivity. And the thing is, they do it a little different with their secondary. And maybe that's part of what Aranda wants to study. I thought about this as well. LSU, in its DBU heyday, has relied on man defense, especially with its corners on an island, to not only get by, but to try and put a chokehold on people. And they've had the types of corners, they've had the types of horses to run that race. Maybe coming into this season without Tolliver, without Jackson, lost Savion Smith, lost out on Pat Surtain Jr. Maybe in that type of situation, Xavier Lewis transfers out. Maybe because of all that, because they're a little shy on numbers and perhaps some experience quality at corner, maybe what Aranda's trying to sponge here, if LSU could take some things away from this supposedly reciprocal situation, maybe what Aranda's trying to learn and bone up on is little zone in the back there. Maybe we see some more of that from Aranda than we have in his previous 2 years leading the Tigers. The last coach who tried to do that at LSU, it didn't go too well. You'll recall that experiment under Kevin Steele, who more or less had a cup of coffee as defensive coordinator at LSU before retreating back to the Yellowhammer State and collecting on retirement and whatnot. But I found that interesting and sort of funny for a couple of reasons. Aranda and a lot of the LSU football staff up in the great Northwest right now, and I don't think they're checking out the Space Needle. I think they're studying up with Pete Carroll and company, perhaps to learn more about how to operate a little more regularly out of zone. And that's been one of the things, and it's funny because this kind of harks back to a guy who is at the tip top of LSU's DBU days, Patrick Peterson. If you've ever heard, I always want to call him PP7. Let me adjust my train of thought. If you've ever heard PP21 talk about who's the best corner in the game and what makes the best corner in the game, he has no problem throwing shade, which I'll do here in about 10 minutes. But Peterson's got no problem throwing shade at a guy like Richard Sherman. Because as Peterson says, he only has to lock down half a field. I travel on the opposing team's best receiver. I go wherever he lines up, and that's my man from the time the game starts until it's over. Sherman operates a lot more out of the cover two philosophy. So maybe that's part of what Aranda and company are trying to do. But, man, if I had any say, if I were able to jerk the leash on that puppy, so to speak, I would not want Aranda sniffing around pro franchises. Not that any of them could pay the man $2.5 million a year, but just off GP, man, just off general practices and purposes, do not give the NFL its next great defensive coordinator. So a lot of thoughts raced through my mind as I saw that news earlier today. I wanted to make sure I shared it with you. We got a lot more coming up on today's program. A few more minutes in this segment if you'd like to call in. We've talked a lot about Acadiana High football and maybe where the Ted Davidson era ranks since 2005. LSU baseball on the table. Cajuns did lose 5-2 last night. Southeastern, Hammond America, Cajuns is having a hard time hitting the baseball right now. Any or all of those topics tickle your fancy, Aranda in Seattle, call us up. 706-0111. We'll have a little different flair as we move forward in the show. Robin Fambro at 5:30, and I'm really excited. It's straight up 6 o'clock. I've watched this man coach a number of basketball games. Haven't had him on the program yet. Shame on me. I changed that at 6 o'clock. Oliver Winston, head basketball coach of the number one seed in Class 4A boys basketball, the Westgate Tigers, program that won the 2007 5A state title. So Winston's scheduled to join us at 6 o'clock. So on the eve of boys basketball playoffs in Louisiana, we're going to pound that zone just a little bit more on the program. And then at 6:30, I thought a very good interview yesterday with Larry Holdner, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. He's a radio star in New Orleans as well now. Larry Holdner joined us yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour. Today, as our 6 o'clock crowd comes shuffling through, I'm going to bring him aboard and his thoughts on when. For him, it's not if, but when the Saints are able to lock down Drew Brees. And a lot more on the franchise tag and then free agency. Which way the Saints may go in getting rid of restricted free agents and potentially bringing in free agents. They did a pretty darn good job, you may recall, last year. A lot of difference makers in Alex Okafor before he got injured. Difference makers in Teau, for my money, especially in A.J. Klein at the linebacker position. So just what are they looking to do this year? And I also discussed with Larry Holdner the 2018 NFL draft. And I continue to hear the possibility of tight end is a real one for the Saints at the number 27 overall pick, to which I'm going to need a trash can, some kind of wastebasket, so that I don't throw up on the floor. They wouldn't like that at the Taproom River Ranch. I wouldn't do that to my friends here. So a lot more coming up on today's program. On the other side of this break, I'm going to throw a little bit of shade. I am hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch, and there is a huge crowd that is here for 5:14 p.m. So come on over. You get here in the next 45 minutes. They've still got happy hour going on from 8 until 11. Live music, the stylings of one Julie Williams. And, of course, more beers on draft that you could shake a stick at. They've got the wings with the schwing sauce, because you're doing it right, and all the flatbreads that make this the easiest place to come all Lent long. Come and join me out at the Taproom River Ranch, 201 Settlers Trace Boulevard. All right, we are going to take our first break of the hour, and then we'll return to the Tap Room. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we come at you every weekday, starting at 4 o'clock on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, and all around the world at 103.7thegame.com. And, of course, don't forget about the free 103.7 The Game mobile app powered by the Golf Connection. We know golfers. We know golf. History could be made tonight in Alabama. That's right. We'll talk more about that in this segment as UL Hoops is going to play at Troy, 7:15 tip-off. Right now, you're listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And, Clint, before we could touch that, I got to give a PSA. I got to remind folks, no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Don't believe me? Go to the website. You'll see patiocenter.com. You'll fall in love with the customized patio covers with cypress accents, standing seam metal awnings, and retractable shades and screens, just to name a few. And then you'll make the right decision before this summer, and then you'll have the best patio game on the block, seeing everything you want on the TV without any glare. It all starts with a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website patiocenter.com.
Clint is going to field today's Throwing Shade, and I love it. I absolutely love it when team Twitter accounts, when team social media accounts blast off and tee off on media members. And today, Skip Bayless got. Clint, please tell the story.
I mean, we all know that the Pelicans love to just troll like no tomorrow. We saw what happened as we got closer to trade deadline with Fletcher Mackel, but Skip Bayless was the latest target, with Skip Bayless tweeting out on February 21st, Anthony Davis is the most overrated player in basketball. Now on at Undisputed, that stupid show that nobody watches on Fox Sports 1. Now, the Pelicans decided to fire back and clap back in the biggest way possible by posting individual statistics, and it shows a bunch of names that you probably don't know, and all of a sudden you see Bayless. 15 games, 21 points, average 1.4 points per game, and then a picture of Stephen A. Smith kind of looking at him, and then you've got a Google image search of the most overrated player in basketball, and it's all pictures of Skip Bayless. My goodness, Pelicans, you are just destroying the game.
I love it. I absolutely love it, Clint. And I will ask this question. It doesn't specify what level of basketball that was at. For all we know, that could be JV basketball stats. Am I right about that?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's JV stats, to be quite honest with you, because I don't think any collegiate team, even if it's like Division III or even Division IV, if that even exists, would have Skip Bayless on their team.
There's something about these stats for media members or people that try to make themselves famous that crack me up. And it takes me back to when LeVar Ball started talking about beating Michael Jordan, beating Charles Barkley in games of one-on-one. And then they showed his Washington State stats. At least that's D1. And the guy averaged like 2 points a game. Skip Bayless, whatever level of basketball that was, you're now out there on wax as putting up 1.4 PPGs, bro. That's not a good look. The Pelicans threw shade at you, and it landed.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business in 2017.
A little Raging Cajun's basketball fix for you here. I'm going to pick back up on this topic. The 5 o'clock hour, 7:15 UL tips off at Troy. They're looking to win the first Sunbelt Conference regular season title for the program since 99-2000, back when Juvie Wayne and everybody, well, they were putting it down for that same year. You may also recall that. The Cajuns have a 3-game lead over Georgia State. Now, Marlins men could also claim the regular season conference title if the Panthers lose at Texas State tonight. So, UL 13-1 in league play, and they're awfully close to closing things out and securing the number one seed in the Sun Belt Conference tournament. Troy, for what it's worth, a game under 500 overall, 13-14, even Stevens 7-7 in league play. Then the other big milestone that could come down tonight. You heard last week on the program, Dan McDonald mentioned this, Bob Marlin would win his 500th game in a storied career tonight. In 25 seasons, by the way, as a head coach. Marlin has posted stops at Pensacola Junior College and Sam Houston State. For the Raging Cajuns, 151-108. But tonight could be half of 1,000, and that is nothing short of remarkable. So to a guy who's been very good to me since I started doing radio in this market, salute and the best of luck to Bobby Marlin. We got to take a break. We're coming back with Robin Fambro, high school basketball talk. When we return, it's Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. The playoffs start tomorrow night for Louisiana high school boys basketball. Excited about that. Excited for more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And our next guest aboard the ARTCO Equipment Hotline, the one and only Robin Fambro, high school sports beat writer for The Advocate Baton Rouge. Robin, welcome back in. How are you?
Hey, doing good. How about you?
I'm pumped up. You know I love my basketball, and this Acadiana area has a wealth of talented teams that are going into the state playoffs. And why don't we start at Class 4A? And I'll lead off with the number one seed, Westgate High. I'll have Oliver Winston on here in the next 30 minutes. What's your make on the Tigers and a remarkable season so far?
They seem to have all the makings of a team that can, you know, make that deep playoff run. Now, with that said, I've always felt that 4A in basketball is one of the toughest and most balanced. You have a lot of teams that all as well. We have some teams that may not be seeded very high or as high as they should be, and it's kind of like the old wolf in sheep's clothing. It's like, oh, some team that put it all together late in the year. So there can be some upsets along the way, but there's always so much balance and so much talent. You know, I'm kind of curious to see how this one comes out because in the second round, of course, Westgate's going to play West Ouachita. They could potentially play a team from our area, Plaquemine. Saw those teams square off a few years ago in a playoff game where the roles were a little bit reversed. Plaquemine was the higher seed in that one. Now, something to note, if this matchup does happen for Acadiana area fans, ULL football signing A.J. Riley is one of the top players for Plaquemine. He plays an inside role, kind of a forward center type, rebounds, does a lot of dirty work. So that could be something worth checking out.
Robin, I know we spoke off air, and out of teams from this area that are not ranked, say, one or two, you really like the Karen Crow Golden Bears, the five seed in Class 4A.
Oh,
what can you say about them?
Absolutely. They have played a tough schedule. They've played all comers. They've played people from all classes. And when you do that in succession like they did, and they you know, Coach Kovacs put them through some tough paces where they would have 3- and 4-game stretches that were extremely tough. In other words, there were no cupcakes in there. Because I'm reminded that about one of our teams in this area that had a really, really tough 4-game stretch, and at the end of it, they dropped one. And I made the comment, they said, oh, but they lost to so-and-so. I was like, did you see who they played the night before? You know, and you got to look at those things. Coach is getting his team battle tested for this year, and they're one of those teams that has the possibility to really make one of those runs also, because he's made sure they've seen different types of competition, different styles of play, some teams with height, some teams with speed. You know, I can't imagine a team being much more prepared than they are. With the possible
talking
exception
with Rob,
maybe Westgate.
Our guest now on 103.7 The Game is Robin Fambro. Let's go briefly the other top seeds in this area. St. Thomas More in Division 2 and LCA in Division 4. Do you like the chances of one or both to get to Lake Charles and win it all?
I think they have excellent chances. LCA, I think, would have to be considered a prohibitive favorite. St. Thomas More is obviously right where they want to be. You know, you've got two teams that I would have thought going in them at number one, and then one of my teams at the bottom, University High, University Lab School at number two, kind of wound up where they thought they were going to be, and it's a matter of playing through it. And, you know, the thing, too, is St. Thomas More is guaranteed two home games with the rule change where the quarterfinals, the higher seed automatically hosts. It really doesn't matter who wins between St. Charles and Loyola. They're going to come to Lafayette to play. And sometimes that game where you're in between and you get caught on the road, that's not really an issue for select teams because, of course, with this setup, they don't have to play as many games. So I, for that, and have so much respect for Coach Danny Broussard and what he does. They just come out and play well. They play the game the right way. Some years he might have more talent than others. Not necessarily see a great drop-off in performance, not really. So I'm kind of anxious to see how they do. I think that's going to be very intriguing. And, you know, LCA is just LCA with Greg Williams and those guys. And they're primed to make a run every year. This year is no different. And looking at who they have, you know, I'm looking at it, and I'm kind of curious to see who would come out of this group to challenge them. They just need to take care of their business and do all the things that they normally do, and I suspect we will see them in Lake Charles without an issue.
You know, Robin, about the only thing that is interesting about LCA's draw is if they keeps going with chalk, they would see Southern Lab in the semis this year, not the finals.
Correct. And Southern Lab, this is a different Southern Lab team this year now. He's had to kind of go back and rebuild. Had a number of kids that they went through an administration change at the school, and there was some question over the summer what was going to happen. And because of that, you had a few kids that opted to go other places because for whatever reason. And then he's had some injuries with some guys. He's got a 6'7 post player who has some skill. And, of course, the person on coach I'm talking about is Devin Clark, who, of course, coached at Northside for a number of years. He's now at Southern Lab. And they had some injury issues, but they've come on and they played very, very well. Had a nice two-game sequence in their district with White Castle. White Castle is always one of the top teams. Well, they used to always compete for the same title, and now White Castle has won a non-select, and they're a number four seed. They're the defending champions on that side. So, you know, Southern Lab is also a team that's gotten better, I guess, as the season goes on. How they would match up with LCA, that kind of remains to be seen. I think it'd be interesting. A lot depends on if they're able to overcome some of the injuries they've had and some of the other issues and really get it all together. Then you could have something kind of interesting there. But we'll see. We'll see. I just, what LCA does is it's different. And they're playing on such a high level and have for a few years. But again, the catch 22 there is this is the playoffs. You can't ever take anything for granted. You have a bad shooting night, you're gone.
We continue our visit with Robin Fambro, a great follow on Twitter, especially at this time of year, at FambroADV. Robin, who is the most vulnerable number one seed in any bracket?
Yeah, and you and I talked about this earlier. Actually, probably at this point in time, I would have to say it is Madison Prep. And that's going to surprise a lot of people. Madison Prep is in their first year in Class 3A. But the issue there is they have had a lot of injuries this year. Georgetown signee Josh LeBlanc probably only played 4 or 5 games. He's still working back into shape from a broken foot. ULL signee Kobe Julian got hurt 2 weeks ago, tore an ACL, so he's gone for the year. And then another starter for them, Jared Whitfield, has a wrist injury. They were still waiting to see how that was going to go. Now, for Coach Jeff Jones, some guys have stepped up and played extremely well over the last few weeks, but this team is not quite the same makeup as the other ones. You have a lot of guys who are less experienced. And in 3A, this is not a bracket always you want to be less experienced in, especially when, well, at least Peabody's on the other side of the bracket. They're the number two. But they could face Northwest in the second round. And also hanging out there at number nine, a team that they would have to play in the quarterfinals, possibly, would be Washington Marion. And Washington Marion is one of those teams that's also had some players in and out of the lineup, have gotten some of those guys back. I had this discussion with somebody earlier this week, and basically they're on kind of a roll, like maybe 9 or 10 in a row. So, you know, that's an extremely tough draw. And not saying they're not capable. They're very capable, but it's a different kind of mix, and this is a team they've risen through the ranks very quickly from B to 1A to 2A. This is their first year in 3A. Now, they play some of these teams non-district. They're familiar with them, but, again, the playoffs, they're a different ball of wax.
I'd be remiss, Robin, if I didn't ask you your reaction to Ted Davidson stepping down on the football side of Acadiana.
Wow. I mean, what a gentleman and what a great coach. And the thing that I admire is he's doing it on his own terms. He kind of assessed his situation. That's what he told me today. And, you know, wants to have some time for himself. And he's been a head coach for 14 years. He's 65 years old. He, you know, kind of has some things he's looking forward to on the other side. And at the same time, he feels confident in leading the program because he feels like they'll do exactly what they did when he was hired. They'll hire from within. It'll be a quality hire, and the program will just continue being successful. So, I mean, kudos to him. And such a great ambassador for football in that area. Always wonderful with the media. I had somebody who texted me today, you know, you heard he retired. Have you talked to him? And I said, not yet, but I left him a message. And this person started texting somebody else. I said, it's okay. I said, he always calls back. I said, it may take him a little while. And sure enough, probably 20 minutes later, he called me back. So, because he was, hey, coach, you really don't have to talk to people like me much anymore unless you want to. So, but, yeah, just tremendous. And I'm going to be very curious to see how that goes when they hire someone. Who they
yeah,
hire.
You and me both.
So, yeah, I mean, that it's. I admire the man. He's obviously run a great quality program and taking things to another level. And I'm kind of, I guess, as I get older, I'm one of those people that sees that, hey, at some point you ought to be able to go do what you want to do, and that's exactly what Ted Davidson feels like he's going to do. Something I found out about him today, he's got an interesting hobby. He likes to train dogs. Retrievers, to be exact.
Wow. So now we have a little bit of a purview into what he may be doing. Okay.
Yeah, he talked about it. He said, I don't know a lot about it. I enjoy it. He said, that's probably something I'll try to do a little of. And he talked a little bit about, you know, maybe wanting to travel like most people do. And you know, my thing is kudos to him. Now, if he would want to, he's somebody I'd like to see as a color commentator on a few games with you.
I like that idea a whole lot.
That beer offense, what do you think about that? Could there be anybody better?
Evaluate the beer offense. Help train up your dog. He's got a lot of things that will be in his future. Robin, this was a lot of fun. It's a great time of year. I hope to see you in Alexandria and Lake Charles. Safe travels.
Let's count on it. Thanks so much. You take care.
You as well. Robin Fambro, dropping the goods with us. She really does a tremendous job and has for quite some time. I love that tidbit on Ted Davidson and maybe what he's looking forward to in life after coaching football. She wants him to do a little color analysis. He'd be dynamite there. But the idea of helping to train dogs, one of the best tidbits that's been dropped on this show in a minute. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to wrap up the 5 o'clock hour, and then we're bringing on one of the Barry's finest, Oliver Winston, head basketball coach of the Westgate Tigers, top seed in Class 4A. Keep it right here. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
There she stood in the street, smiling from my head to her feet. I said it.
That's right. Get excited. Jump up unless you're driving, then sit down and calm down. Just keep listening. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Huge. No hyperbole here. Huge crowd right now at the Tap Room River Ranch. They're all here to listen to me talk about Cajuns basketball. Of that, I have no doubt. But you really ought to come join in on this number. This is Rhythms on the Rhythm type stuff right here. By the way, Rhythms is coming back on March 29th, but this place is packed right now. A lot of people having a lot of fun. Come and join us. Don't forget Julie Williams, 8 until 11 p.m. with the live music. I am going to talk a little more Cajuns basketball, Clint. I didn't want to force just a small bit of it into post-Shade life there, but this is another pretty cool honor. CollegeInsider.com comes out with a regular mid-major top 25 poll. And for the first time ever, or should I say, with its highest ever ranking, the Cajuns clock in this week at numero dos, trailing only Gonzaga, which, look, it almost doesn't need to be explained what type of basketball program that is. Gonzaga under Mark Few is the college basketball, what for so long Boise State under Chris Peterson was to college football. So absolutely incredible stuff right there. The Cajuns are the second highest-ranked team in the CollegeInsider.com mid-major poll. Now, with all that being said, the same question is still being asked just about everywhere, and it was just asked of me not long ago, within the last hour on Twitter, by our friend Lord Bishop. I'll just give you his exact question to me. Who has a better shot to go dancing? UL team who wins out but loses in Sun Belt Final, or 20-win LSU? And I'll tell you how I responded on Twitter. It's 20-win LSU, and it's not even close. It's also not exactly fair to the Raging Cajuns, but what about life or sport is fair for the most part. But here's the other reason that I answered that way. LSU is currently 16-11. If LSU finds a way to 20 wins, that means they've ended the season some kind of hot. Let's just say for poops and gigs that LSU wins its last three games, which would be pretty remarkable. But if they win their last three, they'd be 19-11, finishing the regular season. If they win one in the conference tournament, that gets them to 20. If LSU wins this next three games, that means five in a row to end the regular season, and then another in the SEC tournament, that resume gets LSU dancing, in part because of the strength of the Sun Belt Conference, the SEC Conference, but in larger part because of LSU's quadrant one wins, which also includes Michigan and Houston, which has nothing to do with the SEC. Now, on the flip side of that coin, unfortunately for Bob Marlin and company, is the lack of strength and the lack of cachet that the Sun Belt gives you well. And so that's why I answer Lord Bishop that way, and I would tell you the same thing. Man, I'd be fair to the Cajuns, but if they don't win in Lakefront Arena, they don't win at all there, they're not going dancing. And Bob Marlin said that on this program before the season started. So it's not hating and it's not post-shade, it's just the reality. Now, if the Cajuns went undefeated during the regular season in the conference and then lost in the final, the story may be a little different. And I know how stupid that sounds. Should one regular season loss at Georgia State really make that much of a difference? And by appearances' sake, I think the answer is yes. Because I think if the committee looked at an undefeated conference team who then lost the nail biter in the final, even though their resume wouldn't be that much different from what it is now, it would look different. Undefeated in conference is undefeated in conference. But the way UL's playing right now, the type of love they're getting, they just need to keep winning. They stay healthy, they will win it all in New Orleans, and they will go to the dance, and I think they will be an 11 seed. Mark that down. Take that for data. No 12, no 13 BS. 11 seed. Playing a 6 seed and a team that more than likely ain't going to want to see them. So the Raging Cajuns tip off in about an hour and 20 minutes over in Troy. They win it. They lock up the program's first regular season conference title since 99-2000, and they'd secure win number 500 for Bob Marlin in his storied career. Pretty cool stuff going on. We're going to take a break. When we return, Oliver Winston, Westgate High basketball coach. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Ready to roll. Hour 3 of 3. It's a Thursday, February 22nd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch and only on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here inside a packed house. The famous Clint D keeping us on track. He's in the ShopRite Tobacco Plus Studios. Busy final hour of the program, and we start with a first-timer to the show. Thrilled to welcome aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline head basketball coach of the Westgate boys team that is top-ranked in Class 4A, Oliver Winston, with us on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coach, how are you today?
I can't complain. How are y'all doing?
We are fantastic. You told me earlier today that if your team is still practicing by 6 o'clock, it's a bad sign. You guys are done. That has to be good things, right?
Well, we're done. Let's just hope it's good things.
You start off tomorrow night with a home game against number 32, West Wachita. So some of the scouting report that you've been able to put together so far, what type of team is coming to New Iberia tomorrow night?
They're guard-orientated. You know, they want to slow the ball down, be very deliberate offensively. So, you know, we just kind of worked on some things to make sure we control the tempo of the game and also utilize the bigs that we have to kind of neutralize any of their guard penetration or them trying to be a guard-oriented team.
Coach, I know that throughout the regular season, head coaches, assistant coaches, they kind of keep their own math, and they usually know just where their team is going to wind up by the time you get into the playoffs. All that said, what was your reaction on Monday when the brackets were released and Westgate was the number one seed in 4A?
I'm kind of blessed. I mean, I have a good coaching staff, and so, you know, I've got a couple of mathematicians that teach math on my staff. So, you know, they kind of projected it a couple of weeks prior to, just simply because the way power rankings are done and who teams have to play. And the two teams that were above us kind of had to play the lower part of their district. And we were kind of, you know, fortunate where we had, you know, Northside and Karen Crow kind of back-to-back. So, and that just kind of helped us numbers-wise. So we were excited for the kids. We were excited for the community and the city of New Iberia. But my assistant coaches kind of knew it, you know, about 2 weeks before.
Our guest, Oliver Winston, head basketball coach of the Westgate Tigers, a program that won the 2007 5A state title. And last year, you guys got awfully close, a 68-63 loss in the 4A semis to Ellender. What did that do to maybe get this program where it wants to go this year? What did you learn from that, and how do you kind of take it moving forward?
We've always kind of had a philosophy that, you know, you don't have to lose to learn something. So, you know, we'd rather win and learn. In that situation, my kids were great. And just coincidentally, we had three guys kind of go down with less than a minute into the second quarter, and we kind of fell short. But what it did teach us is that, you know, as long as we stay together, as long as the kids stay focused, as long as they stay connected to each other, we can kind of go as far as we want. And this is a good group. It's a lot of the guys from last year. But they're a fun group. They enjoy being around each other. So as long as we can do that, we're going to be successful.
Coach, for some of our listeners that haven't had the pleasure of seeing your kids yet this year, I'd love for you to kind of shout out some of the leaders of your team, and especially some of those bigs that have been making a big difference.
A lot of people know, you know, we probably have two of the premier guards in the state, which is our point guard, Tyron Chevalier, and McKeever Eddie. And they're both averaging close to 20 points a game. And then Jansen Mayo and Keith Lopez are kind of the bangers, the cleaner-uppers. So those kids have been doing a great job. I'm very proud of them, and, you know, hopefully we stay healthy, they stay focused, and we can kind of go on as long a ride as we can.
You mentioned, as we continue our visit with Oliver Winston, Keevy Eddie, and I called a Karen Crow Westgate game in the Barry this year where he was forced into action at quarterback. So that's a kid that I would say from firsthand experience, a special athlete, and seems to be up to whatever challenge you put in front of him.
Yeah, Keevy is. Like I said, I mean, you know, he kind of played receiver and defensive back. He's one of those kids where if you go and tell him, look, we need you to do this no matter what the circumstance, because it ended up happening in the playoffs as well. He kind of got thrust at the last minute to have to play quarterback. He's not going to blink an eye. He's not going to make an excuse. And he's going to go out and try to give you 110%. So he's one of those kids where you just enjoy being around him. He's a good kid. Just happens to be blessed athletically. He's a good academic kid. He's just a good kid, and a kid that is a kid that you wouldn't mind inviting into your home and taking care of your kids, because that's the kind of quality kid he is.
You mentioned earlier how blessed the New Iberia area has been, and so I'd be remiss if I didn't rope into this conversation in the 5A bracket. Nish, the Yellow Jackets, are the number 8 seed. So what is it about the Barry this year? Something special going on. What's in the water, Coach?
Well, I don't know if it's unfortunate or people don't pay attention. Last year, you know, both teams were in the top 10 as well. I mean, we've been really, really, really blessed in a sense. We've had some really good base basketball in the Acadiana area. And New Iberia just happens to be 4 and 5A, and we've been able to kind of support two teams that always are in the hunt. So it's just one of those opportunities. New Iberia has always been a rich basketball city, and with the two schools existing, you know, we've done a really good job with kids and with the administrations and the different schools to really put two really good competitive teams for people to see night in and night out, and that's a rarity. But I can't just leave it to New Iberia. It's the whole Cadian area. I mean, you know, St. Thomas More is number one in their division. Karen Crow, Brobridge, Northside, are all sitting in the top 10. So that's a rarity in an area to have so many teams and so many classes that have an opportunity to get to the top 28 and without doubt have a possibility of winning the thing.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you look at 4A alone, and as you know, eight area teams represent out of the 32. So while I know that all of your focus and effort is being put into West Wauchatoa, you've got Karen Crow, Cecilia, and Brobridge alone that are in your half of the bracket. So knowing that you've seen some of these teams, if you catch them down the line, what does that mean? How could that help you, or do you see that maybe as almost a deterrent?
No, it's definitely not a deterrent. I mean, you know, and again, you can't really project because I've been doing this for a long time. And we've been high seeds and we've gotten beaten. We've been low seeds and we've beaten high seeds. So it's a matter of going game by game. But trust me, if we get down the road and we have to play a Karen Crow or Brobridge or a Cecilia, it's going to be a packed house. It's going to be exciting. People are going to come. And it's nothing but a benefit no matter who wins the game. Because you're talking about a rich area of basketball. The fans would be just incredible, and the amount of support and community recognition would just be great. So you can't lose.
I love that answer. We'll wrap it up now with Oliver Winston, head basketball coach of the Westgate Tigers, top seed in Class 4A. They start their playoff run tomorrow night at home against West Wauchatoa. So, Coach, before we let you go, to the fans that are listening, from the people in New Iberia, what would you tell them as the Tigers embark on a playoff run?
Support your teams, whoever they are. And if your team doesn't make it, you find another team in Acadiana that's doing well. And Acadiana, if they get behind these teams, no telling how good they'll be and how much you'll enjoy it and you'll propel young people to reach for higher goals. So, you know, root for your team. Go out and support them. New Iberia, come out and support your two teams. And let's see where we can go. And if everything works out right, we'll get an opportunity to be in the top 28. And Acadiana can show up big and make some big things happen.
Well said. And, Coach, I want to thank you as well as Coach Antoine. I was scrambling before doing this show over at Westgate High to get in the press box, and you were able to help hook me up and get in there. So thanks for enabling this show to go on back in September, and thanks for coming on tonight.
Anytime we can help you, we appreciate y'all's support, and thank y'all so much.
That's Coach Oliver Winston of Westgate High. Really cool stuff. And he's right. It's not just New Iberia. You look around the Acadiana area, and as I go through the brackets, we'll do this, and then we'll take our first break of the hour. Area teams that are in each classification of the boys' state playoffs doesn't even scratch the surface of what the girls have already started as they're getting closer to the quarterfinals. But the boys, four area teams in Class 5A in the playoffs, a whopping eight in 4A, six Acadiana area teams in 3A. You've got two that are in 2A. And as you go to the select side of things, three teams, including the top overall seed in St. Thomas More, in select Division II, three teams in select Division III, and then LCA, one of seven area teams in select Division IV. And then, of course, with Northside Christian and Episcopal of Acadiana, two area teams in the playoffs in select Division V. So really, really cool stuff that's going on. And it all tips off tomorrow night. Our thanks again to Coach Oliver Winston for indulging us there. We're coming toward the end of our first segment. When we return, you want to talk some high school basketball, maybe a little college basketball or baseball. Our phone lines are always open. 706-0111. Ben Love hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch, where this place is still on fire. Come out and join us. They've got happy hour that picks up again at midnight and goes until 2 a.m. Okay, maybe that's too late for you. If it is, they've got live music from 8 until 11 p.m. Julie Williams will be here laying down sound. Come out, check her out, and then get some of this action in your life. We're going to take a quick break, then we will return. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, online at 103.7thegame.com, and all over the planet. Anywhere you can find internet on the free mobile app. That's the free 103.7 The Game mobile app, and it's brought to you by The Golf Connection. We know golfers, we know golf. Oh, yeah. Look, we aim to please. There's a reason we're playing this song now. Bumper to Bumper Sports with you on 103.7 The Game. Clint, you know, as Brick House plays on, that we tell a lot of stories on this show. And most of them are true. I promise, most of them are true. This is a true story as well. I had a lady here at the Taproom River Ranch in the break come and slide a note to me, and I'm going to read it to you because I'm staring at it right now. Would you please play Brick House? And from that point, I became the moron. I was coming out of my last set. She handed me that note, and I basically was the rube who said, lady, I don't know how to break this to you, but I'm not here spinning the tunes that are playing in the house PA system. That's not what I'm here doing. And she looked at me and said, I know who you are, and I know what you're doing. It was a joke. So to her, okay, yeah, you're right. I was the heel there. But the joke's also now on you because I did just play Brick House, not in the building, which, by the way, continues to be packed here at the Taproom River Ranch. I told her I'd play Brick House. I just said, you're probably not going to hear it unless you go out to your car. And she said, well, I'm not doing that. I said, well, if you download the free mobile app, maybe we can get something cooking that way. She said she'd think about it. So, Clint, we may have converted another over to the free 103.7 The Game mobile app as your boy absolutely swung and missed on that joke.
Yeah, definitely not your brightest moment there, Ben.
No, and that's okay. It turned into something usable on radio, so for that, we are grateful. She added to the bountiful harvest that has been this Thursday, February 22nd edition of B2BS. Would you please play Brick House? As if my boy David, the GM here at the Taproom River Ranch, is not savvy enough with the tunes he's got going. I mean, seriously, my headset was off during that break. I heard Gary Clark Jr. and it went into a little Led Zeppelin. So they're doing okay here. I don't think they need my assistance, but I do kind of wonder now what would happen if Brick House broke out on the house PA system. But again, that's not my job. That's not what I do. I sit here and I talk sports for the most part and tell mostly true stories from 4 until 7 p.m. You want to get a word in, tell your own version of a true story, that's fine. 706-0111. On the other side of our next break, I'm going to bring back my interview with Larry Holder. And that's something I'm looking forward to. I really am. Because if you didn't hear it yesterday, we know you love the Saints. Maybe you're one of those weirdos that lives in this area and you love the Cowboys. I can't do anything for you. I'm not speaking to you. You're not in my demo. But for Who Dat Nation, Larry Holder with all kind of insight into, not if but when, the Saints ink Drew Brees to a new short-term deal and what they're likely to do as far as distributors in the free agency period and acquirers. That's a lot of ers. People who acquire players. And then what they'll do in the 2018 NFL draft, especially with that number 27 overall pick. So make sure you stay tuned for that. How about an LSU football note as we wind down this segment? And I'll take any other requests, by the way. We got Brick House in. We got time for a few more bumper songs, so let us know. But apparently Tommy Moffitt here in the last couple of minutes on in Baton Rouge radio told Hunt Palmer and Jacob Hester, wait a minute. Hunt's allowed to do stuff with people other than us? Might have to look at that contract again. But Tommy Moffitt, LSU strength and conditioning guru, told them he's going retro this summer with workouts. All right, Coach, what's that mean? It means that the Tigers are going to conduct some conditioning work in Tiger Stadium and on the Mississippi River levee like they did years ago. I love it, man. I love it. Back to basics. Back to square one. And if Coach O could take his shirt off and run around half nude on the levee, the players could do it as well. The only problem with that is, which media member is going to be the first to stalk said half-naked 18- to 22-year-old young men while they're jogging around the levee? Damn it, Deli, don't be that guy. The money's probably on you, the smart money at least, but Deli, don't be that guy. Let somebody else go out there and be that guy. Jacques Doucet, Acadiana's own, don't be that guy. Let somebody else go be that guy. If I were still on the beat and working there, I assure you I would not be that guy. And it's not because I'm lazy. I'm just not going to stalk people working out without shirts on the levee. It's not what I do. It's not what I'll ever do. But according to Tommy Moffitt, it is what the Tigers will do. Not the stalking part, but the working out on the Mississippi River levee part. No truth to the rumor yet that really what they're doing is just jogging on a beeline to L'Auberge Baton Rouge, which could be a win-win for almost everybody. including LeBaire's Baton Rouge. Interesting note there from Tommy Moffitt as he's on right now with the guys in Baton Rouge. We're coming toward the end of this segment. Make sure you stay with us. Larry Holder coming up on the other side. We got you all the way until 7 o'clock. And at 7:15, you can watch it on ESPN3. The Raging Cajuns look to wrap up the program's first regular season conference title since 99-2000. And that is what's hot on this Thursday as we get closer to another weekend of baseball. Tomorrow's show, James Moran's going to come aboard. We'll dig a little deeper on the Cajuns' home opener against Wright State and LSU going up against the team the Cajuns played last weekend in the Texas Longhorns. We'll be right back in. Saints conversation will ensue when we return. Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch, playing Brick House, playing whatever floats your boat on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Back in, and Clint, I don't mind telling you, we're getting very close to this being my favorite Tap Room edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. And we look, we've only been doing this here on Acadiana Sports Station. First show was September of 2015. That is not a misprint. That is not a half-truth. I told you, we're telling true stories today. For more than 2 years, we've been doing shows here, almost 2.5 years. At this point, been doing shows every Thursday except for basically Thanksgiving or a couple times at Karen Crow or LCA dragged me away to go do play-by-play stuff. And I already got the request, and we obliged to play Brick House. And then in the break just now, had a dude come up and asked if I was the house DJ. This might turn into a pretty good set of pranks, CD. I don't know if it's like jackass-worthy because there's no in-game that makes anybody fall and hurt themselves. But other than that, I'm wearing a headset. I've got a computer and a JK mixer in front of me. And I'm not sure what this looks like to the untrained eye. But apparently, it looks like I'm here spinning the house tunes, doing the job with mounds of equipment that anybody's iPhone could do hooked up to the house PA system. So the first time was a joke, and I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. The second time, old boy was as serious as a heart attack, Clint. He asked me if I was the house DJ. I'm loving life right now.
All right, this is probably, I'd say, top five Tap Room shows of all time.
I love it. Nobody knows what I'm here for, except for her. The lady did. She was pulling my leg. She knows who I am and what we are here at Acadiana Sports Station, so respect to her. All right, respect to those who really don't want to hear this story. They want to hear from Larry Holder. We're going to give that to you right now. All kinds of pertinent Saints information from a Saints and NFL columnist at NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. All right, we'll get to the Saints now. You and your compadre, Jeff Duncan, you had five free agency decisions that you discussed recently on your show. And I want to start with Kenny Vaccaro. Is it more likely than not that they find a way to deal him, or do you think he comes back and wears the black and gold next year?
I would assume that he is going to be playing elsewhere in 2018. Like, his contract expires at the start of free agency, and like they didn't usually in these situations, whenever the Saints would give a fifth year option on a first round pick, that they typically get a deal done to extend them. We have not seen that with Kenny Vaccaro, and look, the Saints have almost prepared themselves for this day. They've already got Marcus Williams and Von Bell. You would assume they would easily become the starters next year. And look, Kenny Vaccaro, he's going to be trying to maximize his value, and I don't think the Saints are going to be willing to pay what he might be looking for. So I would be surprised if Kenny Vaccaro was a Saint next year. I'm anticipating that he won't be.
Another quick hitter from the secondary. You guys kind of took a little time to gloss over Delvin Bro, and a lot of people have forgotten about Chip. With some of the newfound success, especially with Marshawn Lattimore, how expendable or not is Bro?
I think that's a pretty significant question, and it's almost twofold. Do the Saints feel like they can trust Delvin Bro to return at all? I mean, look, it's been 2 years of injury-riddled time for him. And then As far as Delvin Bro, if they don't give him a tender, which the estimated value for the tender with no compensation would be around $2 million, if they would do so, a team would have to match that or exceed that to be able to take him. But, if they don't do that and they say, hey, Delvin, we want you to sign a cheaper deal, does Delvin say, I think I'm going to pass because of all the angst that has happened between him and the team as far as the medical staff and, the team wanting to potentially trade him because they think he's milking the injury, and then, what do you know, he's actually got a broken leg, so you look silly. So it's a, it's a tricky situation with Bro, but it's, if he was healthy, he'd be a starter opposite Marshawn Lattimore, but we don't know where the Saints stand as far as where they want to go with him.
We're visiting with Larry Holder. Go check out the Free Agency Decisions article with videos that he and Jeff Duncan had. Money Matters will take you right there. If you go again to NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. One more from the Saints side, wide receivers. And you guys touched on Brandon Coleman and Willie Snead, but I would Ted Ginn Jr., just to remind folks about what may or may not be left as far as his contract terms with the Saints. What do they do outside of a clear-cut number one in Michael Thomas?
Ginn's not going anywhere, not after the year he just had. I think they're leaning on him to be a factor again next year as well. But, look, Brandon Coleman's also a restricted free agent, so it's what do you do there? It's certainly a wouldn't be some big stunner if the Saints went some different directions, but that means they've got to go find new players. So that's something that who knows what they're going to be able to do with that. And so it's dicey. Michael Thomas is Michael Thomas. He's not going anywhere. But where you go outside of Ginn, because, look, the Saints have at least one more year left with Ginn, but where do you go after that, I think is certainly an interesting dynamic heading as we get closer to free agency and the combine and then the draft.
Larry, I don't think it was a surprise last year with guys like Tao and Klein, and then even if you go to the front, on the defensive front, that they went after Alex Okafor, that they targeted those positions in free agency. Where do you think the Saints need to go in terms of positions when they acquire free agents?
Now you mentioned Alex Okafor, and look, the edge spot is still up in the air. If the Saints want to bring back Alex Okafor, are we certain that he's going to be ready to go? I mean, tore his Achilles in November, so that's no given that he'll be able to come back. And coming back from Achilles injury, that's not an easy injury to return from. So you're curious to see what happens there. And but they need a guy. Now, is the free agent market the way to go? I'm not sure. It's not some overly impressive free agent market. You could see DeMarcus Lawrence and Ziggy Ansah. You could see those two guys get franchise tag potentially, and then the market really dries up. And honestly, Alex Okafor is probably one of the better options, and that's just telling you something. He's fighting an injury, so it doesn't sound like the defensive end class is all that potent in the draft either. So it's. The Saints are going to have to try to deal something. Now, another spot, I mean, so many people are looking at tight end, and people are trying to connect the dots. Oh, maybe they can bring back Jimmy Graham. Maybe they can draft Dallas Goedert from South Dakota State or Blake Andrews from Oklahoma. And people are trying to peg him with their first-round pick. And, I'm not so sure that I'd be surprised if Jimmy Graham ever came back. So I don't know if I'd peg into the Saints. Maybe they go out and get a free agent tight end, and potentially they draft one. But that's certainly a spot as well as defensive end. And don't discount corner. Look, I still think Malcolm Butler can be on the table, even after all the kind of hijinks that's been going on in New England surrounding his Super Bowl.
I got to be honest, Larry. I loathe the idea of taking a tight end at the end of the first round. So I don't know how you feel on that, but I was going to ask you that question, so I'll do it now. What positions do you think are the most advantageous for the Saints to target in that number 27 spot?
Boy, you got to keep yourself open-minded because you're at 27, you're at the mercy of everyone else. You're basically going to have to go in the same strategy you went with when you took Ryan Ramczyk. You got to go best player available. Yeah. I know it's super cliche, but at that point, you can't reach for a guy just because you have a position need. If a tight end you see there, and if it's a reach, don't feel like you need to go do it. Just remember, Rob Gronkowski was a second-round pick. Jimmy Graham was a third-round pick. Tony Gonzalez certainly was a first round, was not a first-round pick. Antonio Gates was undrafted, and he was a basketball player. So, you know, you can develop tight ends. You don't have to go all in for a guy in the first round, even though you might have a spot. But like I said, I think you got to be open. You got to be open at corner, wide receiver, maybe someone in defensive line. You've got to be extremely wide open. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if for some crazy situation, say Baker Mayfield fell to 27, if I'm the Saints, I'd pull the trigger. So it's something that they need to be wide open, especially with no second-round pick. You just got to be able to take the best football player that's going to be there.
Another brief moment or two with Larry Holder on 103.7 The Game. And you mentioned earlier the franchise tag. That period has opened. For example, the Dolphins have already slapped it on former LSU Tiger Jarvis Landry. Any insight there into the direction the Saints go in 2018?
They're not going to tag anyone. Look, Kenny Vaccaro would have been the only real candidate. That's not going to happen. Drew Brees, even though he's free agency worthy, if they decide to not get a deal done by mid-March, he is not able to be franchise tagged. That's a stipulation in this contract. So that is not an option either. So they're not going to tag anyone. And the last guy they tagged was Jimmy Graham, and that was an interesting tag because they had to go battle an arbitration in front of an arbitrator to see whether he was a wide receiver or a tight end.
And we still probably don't know the answer to that. Either way, they're not throwing it to him in Seattle. But, all right, before we let you go, you mentioned Breeze there. I can't let this whole interview pass without me asking a Breeze question. Do they get a deal done before the league calendar year flips over mid-March?
I think absolutely. When will that get done? Will it get done tomorrow, next week, March 10th, March 13th, March 14th with 4 minutes before the deadline? Who knows? But there will be a deal done. Both parties will want to get it done. There's going to be some posturing by the end, but there's a deal. There's going to be a deal done. Drew Brees isn't going anywhere, and it's. I do at least appreciate some national writers who, when they talk about free agency, they put a little asterisk and don't even include Drew Brees in the quarterback market because everyone just assumes he's going to be resigning. And I think that's a smart move by some national people.
Good stuff there, wouldn't you say? Larry Holder giving us the goods. What's happening in free agency, coming and going? What's happening in terms of Drew Brees? He thinks it will happen. He thinks it will happen before the new league calendar year, which, again, the Saints would incur about $18 million worth of dead money, but they'd be able to spread it out and push it down the line. And then also, he doesn't feel Kenny Vaccaro will be around, does Larry Holder. So I wanted to make sure we aired that one out for you, for anyone who didn't get to catch it yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour. And with that, CD, I think we've spanned just about every inch. We've traversed every inch of real estate that people in these parts love, with the possible exception of Cajuns baseball. So we'll wrap up today's show. We'll touch that base, and we'll remind you about a few other things that are going on in the world of sports. Hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch, I haven't been asked to spin music in the last 12 minutes. Somebody come up and ask me. Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back on 103.7 The Game. The Ice Cube plays, and people, he ain't lying today. It's been a phenomenal one. Glad you're with us one more time, with emphasis, Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And, Clint, it seems that it's not just been a good day for us. Anytime you can get the mayor on live radio bagging on Dave Schultz, the caliber of which I just heard in that liner, absolutely fantastic.
Well, for what it's worth, I think that's most every Thursday. It's just that one was extra spectacular.
I love it. I don't know if it goes there. That got a little personal, which, again, I dig.
I'm not sure it goes there every Thursday, but Dave, don't speak of which you don't know. And when it comes to the married life or the engaged life, go ahead and butt yourself out. All right, let's finish some Cajuns baseball conversation. CD, is a big series this weekend against Wright State because I think it allows the offense to try and get on track. But so far, through four games, Robes guys have been anything but that at the dish, which is a shame because pitching-wise, they've been awfully good. But in a 5-2 loss to Southeastern in hashtag Hammond America last night, what were some of your takeaways? Again, hitting, obviously, they've been anemic, but Colton Schmidt got the go. Some of your reaction.
You know, I think with Colton Schmidt, it was about as expected, I'd say. We wound up seeing five solid innings out of him, six strikeouts, allowed seven hits, which definitely was a little bit suboptimal. But I think when you look at his overall performance when compared to, say, what we saw across the basin in Baton Rouge, I think that's definitely a step in the right direction for the Cajuns, and it's going to be interesting to see what they wind up doing with Colton Schmidt going forward because we still kind of mums the word on Hogan Harris.
Well, one thing that seems pretty clear after the workload that Schmidt experienced last night, just almost impossible for me to imagine they'd bring him back on Sunday. Now, is that to say that he won't pitch in some capacity this weekend, maybe out of the pen and limited innings to try and make up for Hogan Harris if he can't go Sunday? I don't know, but a penny for your thoughts there. Do you think it's possible that if Harris is out, we see Schmidt in some capacity?
I definitely would lean towards yes. I think it's one of those things you just look at in terms of who's your opponent going to be on Sunday. And if you want, you need to wind up winning these games, especially a weekend series after the way you started out. And when you look at the opponent the Cajuns are going to have next Wednesday, it's going to be Nicholls State. I think Nicholls State you can get away with a little bit more as opposed to what we saw on Wednesday against Southeastern in terms of your opponent and what kind of quality they are. That's not a dig against Nicholls State baseball. It just feels like it's a step down compared to what Southeastern has.
So I'll ask you to think back to our interview earlier. Hunt Palmer joined us in the 4 o'clock hour. He does every Thursday. And I asked him for his confidence levels long-term, not immediate and reactionary, but long-term, how confident is he in the four starting pitchers LSU's put on the bump so far? So think about this question, Clint, in that context. Which hitters for the Raging Cajuns that haven't come to life in a very short sample size, four games, which hitters are you most confident in that they eventually will start to lead this offense to greater heights?
I definitely have to say off the top of my head, got to go with Hayden Cantrell. He had a great home run in the first inning, I think the second batter. He's starting to move up in that two hole. Game one, it was really surprising. Both you and I were shocked by this. He was in the nine hole. Before he knew it, he wanted to be in the three hole on, I think, Saturday and Sunday's matchup, and now he's in the two spot. Looks like that's going to be the place to stay for him. He's, again, he only had one of three hits for the Cajuns on the evening, but I definitely think Hayden Cantrell's got to be at the top of that list. Outside of that, I think there's still a lot to be determined. Gavin Bourgeois might be the other one that I would be like, he's going to wind up doing some big things. So it'd be a lot of the younger group.
Well, and worth noting as well that Handsome Monica was out last night. So
yep.
He brings more behind the plate than at the plate, but you would only think that having him back helps the offense as well.
Oh, of course. He's going to be a huge help whenever he comes back. Again, it's just like Hogan Harris. It's a day-to-day thing. Then again, aren't we all?
You got to stop going to the well there because I don't think you realize how often you've made that joke on Twitter and then here on the show. So I find you, you're like the guy who shows up in the same shirt once every like two or three days. But in this case, it's the day-to-day joke. It's the same shirt, and I think I saw you in that shirt on Tuesday. That's all I'm saying.
So we'll see
if we can find you another shirt for the Friday show. I can say this as we wind down today. Thursday, February 22, 2018 has been one of our better shows, I feel, in a while. Tremendous quality on the guests, and they all brought it. So a tip of the cap and our sincere thanks to Hunt Palmer, talking LSU baseball, and a lot of it, Robin Fambro, all things high school basketball. And we looked into the playoffs that start tomorrow for the boys, her most vulnerable number one seed, her most underrated area team. You need to check it out on demand, but I'll give you a hint. It's Karen Crow. We also visited with one of the three number one seeds
going into the playoffs in this area. And their head coach, Oliver Winston of Westgate High, something special going on in the Barry, something special going on with his program. They were a top 10 seed going into the 4A playoffs last year, lost in the state semis this year. They are the number one overall seed. So our thanks again to him. And we replayed an interview moments ago, I should say, with Larry Holder, talking all things New Orleans Saints. And then how can I forget Jacob Cotrera led off today's program, reflecting on the retirement of Acadiana High head coach Ted Davidson. Strong to quite strong program. Thanks to everybody who called in and listened. Your participation, we love it. Thanks to those who came by and asked if I would spin a few tunes for them. That's not really my job, but, you know, thanks a lot. You don't know what I do here at the Taproom River Ranch? That's okay. I'll educate you. I'm about to get off the air, go right to the bar. Then I'll really show you what I'm doing here at the Taproom River Ranch. Thanks, of course, to the famous Clint D as well. We'll peep you on a Friday. My man James Moran coming aboard. We'll get you ready for big-time weekend series for both LSU and UL. That's it. That's all. I'm heading to that bar. Thanks for listening in today. It's been Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.